Welcome to the Triple H podcast. I am your host, Hayley Burns. Joining me today are fellow Hot Hoops writers, David Ramil and Ernest Christian. It's all things big here in the East. Hassan, he's doing a lot of stuff. That's probably going to be one of the positive things we have to talk about today. But how did you guys feel about yesterday's win?
Very encouraged. I mean, I think it might be one of the signature wins of the season so far, right up there with the Mavericks game early in the season and maybe even that Clippers win from a couple of weeks ago. And I think Whiteside's a big part of that. I mean, you go into Chicago, a strong team. I know they're struggling a bit as of late, particularly on defensive end. But, I mean, Whiteside's performance, he's really changed the landscape of the Heat and how they operate on a night-to-night basis. And I think it's a very encouraging sign moving forward. If he can stay healthy, having him as a quality defender and the way he impacts the offense overall, a very solid victory for Miami.
Yeah. Whiteside, I mean, I was shocked yesterday's performance. And remember, too, he missed last two games due to injury. Right. So we didn't even know if he was playing the game until literally an hour before tip-off. So it was very encouraging. And like I said, this could be a turning point for the season also, going to the All-Star break in 2 weeks. So let's see what happens here going forward.
Yeah, I was at the game last week. Who was it? Thunder. Seems so long ago. But yeah, the Thunder game where I got to witness Hassan in person doing his thing. And he was just a menace. And he was so fun to watch. Such a presence on the court. And it's funny because that was the game he got injured in. And it was like literally like hearing people in the crowd who, you know, obviously they're drinking or not paying too much attention. But hearing crowds of, oh my God, put Whiteside in. And it's like, dude, he's injured. But it was funny because that is like now how the season has shifted where we're suddenly going, oh my God, put Whiteside in. Oh my God, Whiteside's not playing. Like this is where we are. January 2015. Yeah. It's oh my gosh, this guy needs to be in. I saw you come up with a point the other day, David, saying, you know, like third quarter hasn't been a problem since Whiteside has been playing for the Heat. Do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Well, I mean, I don't have anything statistic to bring it up, but it just seems like he's turned it around. And actually, I did see some tweets earlier today from one of the guys in the Heat PR staff, Cooper Moorhead, who tweeted out a bunch of statistics about how much better the Heat's defense has been now that Whiteside is playing regularly. I know we had that one game against Portland where we really saw the third quarter implosion really magnified, where Chris Kaman, of all people, was dominating against Chris Anderson. And up to that point, the only, you know, real positive factor for the Heat had been Whiteside. The next game, predictably, he gets much more playing time. We pull away with a victory. And then there's the wins against, you know, the Lakers. You know, these are teams that might not necessarily be dominant ones, but, you know, Whiteside has really changed the offense, especially in the second half. It's been a weakness all season, but now all of a sudden you see him kind of anchor that defense down there, and where teams try to make their move, they're just not able to do so because of him and his impact with blocking shots, rebounding, etc. And it's just, you can't, you know, get past like the power of his hands. And I don't know if maybe in person you saw this up close, but he just seems to have this kind of gravitational pull towards the ball. Whenever it's anywhere near him, he's either going to be able to, you know, draw it toward him or get a hand on it. And he affects quality shots. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. And you know, I mentioned this via Twitter yesterday, and I, you know, Ernest responded back. I've never seen an impact like this, you know, so out of the blue. I know we've had players that, you know, kind of blossomed later in their careers, or maybe they just kind of fit into the right place. But in the middle of a season, a guy who you know, shouldn't even be on an NBA roster right now, and he's not just playing well, he's dominating. And that's just unbelievable to
me. So what do you guys remember as being, you know, true Heat lifers, as much as I hate that term because it's really annoying? it's just so wanky. Come on, it's wanky. It's a wanky term. I get it. It was great marketing, and I get it all, but it's just... Anyway, but who do you guys remember as being the biggest impact for the Heat before Whiteside? Let's go back 1,000 years.
Out of the blue like that? Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. You know, guys remember, are coming. Who can you recall?
I mentioned Ike Austin back in 1996, and this is the year the Heat really broke out. This is the year they won 61 games. That was the year that the term Road Warriors was turned by Eric Reed. That was the year we went to the conference finals. That was Riley's second year, Zoe's second year here. That was truly the first really really successful Heat season we have. We had first playoff series win, and I remember Ike Austin. You know, he came out of nowhere. Like I don't remember where he came from. Like just out of nowhere, he was just a menace for a good 3, 4, 5 months. He's the only guy I can really think of that really truly came in and had a quick impact. Now I hope
when
now,
you say quick, obviously I wasn't.
He wasn't here long. He was gone. I think he was gone for the next season.
Well.
And what how is he gone? Like
here's a little background. Then you know he was drafted by Utah, and that was when those Utah teams had Karl Malone, John Stockton, and they had Mark Eaton in the middle. I don't know if you remember him.
Of course, I
know you remember him, Ernest, but I don't know if Haley remembers him. He's a 7'5" guy.
All about cricket and rugby in those days. I have no idea who you're talking about.
Mark Eaton was probably one of the most prolific shot blockers in NBA history. He was 7'5", gargantuan. He looked a little bit like a shaved Sasquatch. You'll have to look him up online, and you'll probably see that description as being an apt one. And he was just a heck of a shot blocker, but this guy, Ike Austin, he couldn't break the rotation. He started gaining weight. There was some, you know, talk about him having an attitude problem, being a little lazy. And then I think that was where we really saw the impact of, like, Riley taking these unproven players. We had seen it in New York. In New York, he had taken guys like John Starks and Anthony Mason, exactly. Those are the two best cases. Even Charles Smith, who was a starter there. These are guys that, you know, they just couldn't play on other teams, but then Riley would take and mold them into something and just work them so completely that he would, you know, rebuild these careers. And so Ike Austin, he wound up losing 50-something pounds. He came to Heat camp in shape because of Riley's tutelage, and then Riley worked him to death. And then going up against Alonzo Mourning in practice, he was going up against arguably one of the best centers in NBA history, and he really was prepared for when Alonzo Mourning wound up getting hurt that year. Ike Austin stepped in, and we didn't miss a beat. He averaged something like 15 points per game, and he was just a real solid contributor.
Austin? What kind of – was he the end of his career or beginning? What are we thinking?
Middle of his career. I think this was maybe like fourth or fifth year after being drafted out of college.
And had he had a situation like Whiteside where he'd had a touch, you know, had been in the NBA, then, you know, it had been taken away from him in that respect? Or was it this literally like his first kind of intro?
No, he got waived by Utah, and then he spent time playing in Turkey and other teams internationally. And then, you know, he was a pretty strong player.
So why couldn't he follow through?
Well, he did. He had a good year, but then he was also like we're going to see from Whiteside next year, he was in a contract year, and he wound up getting traded to the Los Angeles Clippers for Brent Barry.
Brent.
Yeah,
good chats about Australia. I gave him the heads up where to travel to.
Excellent.
I didn't even know who he was, to be honest. I was like, who's this guy? He keeps asking me on Twitter where to go in Australia. I have no idea who you are.
Well, Austin never became was never the same guy again. He got traded, and then he was that's it. Never heard from him again.
Wow.
Right.
But we'll always have 96-97 ever in our
heart. Do we claim now that we've got a center in Miami? Do we have a true center?
You know, I was reluctant because I think, you know, we've seen the Heat be so up and down this year. And so you have a guy who's, you know, relatively unproven. And so you don't think that he's going to be an impact center. But he's changed the game for Miami. He completely has.
You know
ahead.
So effortless doing it.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
A little bit.
You saw him in real life, didn't you, in Orlando? Did he play
in
that game?
No, my bad.
But, yeah, like it's just his awareness and everything. Like he just looks so effortless. He reminds me of just a big Labrador wanting to play. Like he just, like nothing, like his 11th or 12th block yesterday, like it doesn't feel like he's like breaking the bank, you know, and, you know, cardiovascular wise trying to do these things. It just seems really effortless and it's just like a natural thing for him to be doing.
Right. He's definitely playing with a chip on his shoulder. Now, the thing is, he has a lot to gain from here. The question is going to be whether now, success goes on, can he stay motivated and be the same guy? Like, let's say he parlays into a new contract after next season because he has his rights until 2016. Could they parlay this to a new contract? And then if then, could he still be the same guy? He's saying the right things, obviously. He's a young kid. He's had a past of maturity issues. But he's on the right team here where he can actually mature. You know, he's on Alonzo Mourning's wing. He's playing under Riley, Spoelstra, the whole nine. He got a lot of mature guys in Wade and Bosch. And so he's under a lot of a good security blanket here for people where he can mature and be that guy going forward. But in terms of – he's definitely has a chip on his shoulder. I mean, you saw that Clipper game a couple weeks ago. He was – I mean, he – you know the backstory behind that with him and Doc Rivers. I mean, Doc won't even take his phone call. So what happens? He goes 23-16 against the Clippers, against DeAndre Jordan. You know, so, you know, let's hope that this is a trend moving forward, not just a blip of the last month and a half or so.
Do we think this is something – I mean, it's so early and stupid, but okay. Could this be something that commands – you know, he'll obviously command some dollars, but could this be something that could affect our free agency 2016 if he does become a big show?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because if let's assume, okay, let's say this is reality, and Hassan Whiteside is a future All Star center. I'm thinking David's approach here. I'm not gonna go overboard yet. But let's assume this continues to go the way it is, and he gets better and better and better into next season, and then you know, obviously in 2016. Yes, it's an effect because right away teams are gonna clamor for that. In Miami's case, they're gonna want to keep that. You know, they're gonna want to keep him around. He's young, obviously. He's a Riley guy too. He fits Riley's idea of how to build a team. Pat Riley is a guy that covets it. So he would be probably in the plans of Miami moving forward. So it would affect a little bit of the. Of the pieces that Miami might want to get outside of what we have now beyond next season. So, this could definitely have a strong effect on the Heat's plans in next year and a half.
How is Whiteside complimenting Bosch, if at all? Do you think Bosch is, you know...
He's thriving again at the power forward position. I think small ball over the last 4 years worked so effectively because of LeBron's presence there. Clearly, without him, you know, you have to shift the way that you do things, and now you have to go to more traditional lineups, and I think Bosch is playing well. Look, I mean, he allows him to do what he does best, which is, you know, shoot from the outside. That's where he's most effective right now at this point in his career, and he can still switch that up occasionally if Whiteside's not in the lineup or he's on the bench for whatever reason. So I think, you know, Bosch is just continuing to develop that game from the mid-range and from the perimeter. He's not going to get those rebounding numbers that we saw early in the season, but he doesn't have to. And so it's, you know, he takes a lot less wear and tear on his body. It's going to keep him healthy throughout the course of the season. It'll keep his, you know, he'll prolong his career substantially. I know this is again long term, but I just think it's better, and that's always a matchup problem that we can exploit. You know, it's an advantage for Miami because he's just so much more quick, because he's, you know, more perimeter based at this point. It allows us to have an extra weapon on the outside, and I think it's been great. I think it really has. And the way he complements perfectly with Wade, though, that's the real matchup there. I mean, Wade and Whiteside have, you know, W&W, they have this chemistry on the pick and roll that I've never seen before. It's just unbelievable. Like Wade, you know, draws the double team because he's so effective, because he has such a good, you know, array of low post moves. And then all of a sudden he draws that double team, floats it somewhere in the vicinity of Whiteside, and he catches it with those magnificent hands. And next thing you know, he's finishing at the rim with ease. That's beautiful basketball for Heat fans.
You know those hands, Dave. You know those Whiteside hands.
Is Whiteside a baby, Zoe? Or is that just taking away from... Oh, look, nothing takes away from what Alonzo did, but no, how do we feel about these kind of notions being put out there?
Well, it's early. Way too early. Well, when Alonzo got to Miami in 95, he was already established a top like five center in the league anyway. So he didn't develop that in Miami. That was developed in college at Georgetown and in Charlotte, of course. So, but back to the whole thing with Bosch, you were saying. Chris Bosch, to me, is the biggest beneficiary of the Whiteside movement, because it now allows Bosch to do what he's great at, which is being, you know, a guy that can play in and out of the basket, three-point shots, the whole nine. It allows Bosch to do some of those things we saw with LeBron in the last 4 years, you know, being more diverse with the basketball. And like I said, Chris Bosch's game will age even better now. Let's say Whiteside is the future of this team moving forward. You know, it will allow Bosch to age gracefully into his mid-30s.
Yeah.
I will touch on the All-Star Bosch stuff in a second, but this far into the season, has Bosch lived up to the expectations we thought of him?
I think, you know, people see the size of the contract, and next thing you know, you expect him to be a James Harden type player, but that's not the way Miami is based. I don't think he's getting the kind of usage that other stars that are getting paid comparably are. And so,
in what respect? You want to see him?
He'd have to take
minutes,
not just more minutes, more shots. He'd have to get a significant more amount of touches.
Do you not think that Riley thinks that he's capable of that, or what do you think the plan is?
No, I think Miami's just better when it's a more balanced team. I mean, maybe that works for other, maybe if we were more a team like Houston, and that's a good example there, because you have a guy like Harden who does so many things, he gets so many points, he gets to the free throw line so often, and then you have a lot of good perimeter shooters like Monte Yunus, you have Trevor Ariza, you have Patrick Beverley. These are guys that can score from outside. So when you have a player like Harden who collapses the paint so much, then you kick it out to a guy like that and you wind up getting more scoring.
I'm shocked you didn't say Josh Smith.
I'm sorry, yeah. It's hard for me to think of him as being the role player that he is there.
He's smooth.
Yeah. But, we don't have that kind of production from our guards. Maybe if Norris and Mario were shooting more effectively from the perimeter, maybe we could have Bosch, draw those, defenders in the paint, kick it out to an open shooter, and then to be able to capitalize on that. That hasn't been the case up to this point in the season. So I think, he's just not going to get the kind of touches, the same amount-wise, and so he's not going to be as productive. But, for what he does, he's been effective, he's been efficient, and he's still a really good player. I think certainly worthy of all-star consideration.
Are we happy for him to be left out of all-star? What do we think about that? So,
well, it's still too soon. They're going to do the reserves.
He probably won't get picked for reserve.
Right?
He might. Right. It's still a chance. Bosch over love. Sure.
I say he has. Yeah, I say he has a better chance of making it than Wade as a reserve.
No.
As a reserve.
No, I think Wade definitely.
No, you think about. Think about the numbers. As far as the front court. You have so many other players. You got Wall and Lowry, but then you could just as easily pick Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker. There are a number of backcourt players that might get more consideration than Dwayne Wade at this point. And again,
the only thing with Wade, though, that Wade actually was starting amongst all guards.
Yeah, but
he
still coaches
had a very high number of votes, though.
The coaches don't care about that. They're not necessarily going to vote this guy in, who's an 11-time All-Star. They're not going to necessarily care, following the popular vote. It's just about who they think is more effective, who they plan. I'm sure they all consider Wade to be a very worthy player and a worthy selection. That doesn't necessarily mean that at this point in his career they're going to feel obliged to do it.
I'd be shocked if Wade
blame Justin Bieber, bro. Blame Justin Bieber. Because Dwayne Wade was leading a week and a half ago to be a starter. And then that whole campaign where Bieber told all his fangirls to go vote for Lowry and then 20,000 votes later, he wins by like 10,000 votes. Like, come on. I hate that guy.
Who doesn't want this side with LeBron and Wade again?
You know what? You're right, and maybe I'm just an old curmudgeonly bastard at this point, but I'm fine with Wade not being picked in the All-Star game, to be honest with you.
I was with a whole bunch of people last week in Atlanta who aren't Heat, diehards, and they all were just like, no, Wade. They're all certain Wade will be in.
Did you take in a Hawks game by any chance while you were there?
No, I couldn't be bothered. Only because I'd seen Oklahoma the couple nights before, and I was tired and hungover, and I just wanted to get back to Miami. It was cold. It was like 35 degrees.
Yeah.
I was like, man. It was side note. You really appreciate how good it is. What's funny is when it sidetracked to the Hawks, now that they're obviously top of the table. It was funny over there because all the media guys were just like, man, we're not used to ESPN coming down and, doing live coverage from Hawks games, because they haven't had that media presence for so long. But no, I should have gone. Whatever, I'll go back. But so we are quite happy if Bosch. Okay, so you're thinking that he could possibly be there?
I think coaches consider Bosch to be the more legitimate threat at this point in their career. Yeah, I think so. I think Love is one-dimensional. Yeah. I don't think he's been that effective. I know that he's probably not being used as effectively in Cleveland as he was in Minnesota, obviously. But I think if you're going to look at the versatility skill set of both players, the defense-wise, and I know it's the All-Star game, I think you'd have to give Bosch the nod and not Wade, necessarily.
Interesting.
But like I said, there's like a 9-10-day gap between games during the All-Star break. And I think Wade, more than anybody else, can definitely use those 9 days, 9-10 days off.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, we're moving
Although
along.
he did say 2 days ago that he's gonna be in New York anyway for some business meeting.
Of course, he'll
So,
be there.
oh yeah,
That
that's
was boy, wouldn't you? I'm
the, yeah,
going. I can't wait. My flight's
that's the
booked.
biggest party. That's the biggest party. Yeah, in the NBA
Hometown,
at that
New York City,
Cannot
baby.
wait. Cannot
Remember?
wait. It's gonna be amazing. Deng showed up on defense yesterday. How are we thinking about him as of late?
Love him.
Yeah,
Love the effort. Love that he's been shutting down guys.
consistent. Finally, I
And
don't want to say
this
anything
kind
in
of
case he gets injured.
and Haley, this kind of goes back to the Christmas game against the Cavaliers. I mean, he didn't shut down LeBron. You're not going to shut down LeBron James, but he did play him pretty well in that game, and he's had some really, really good games against some marquee players. Even against Kobe a couple weeks ago. I mean, I know Kobe shot his way out of the game against Miami, but still, I mean, Deng has played very well. I mean, yesterday too against Chicago against his old team, and he did a number on Jimmy Butler too. I mean, I think Deng's playing has been playing so well. All this criticism about Deng also too, to me it's ludicrous because people don't understand Deng's game. Deng's not a guy that's gonna create his own shot. He's a guy you have to get involved. He's a guy that makes baskets off cutter rotation and cutters and whatnot. So Miami has to do a better job of getting him more involved in the offense and, get him to the basket and whatnot.
I think he's been great. I think, I'm still a little hesitant, because he was inconsistent for most of the early part of the season. But, he has, to your point, Haley, been playing much more effectively and consistent of late. So I'm hoping to continue seeing that because I think, he's obviously a highly regarded person. It was nice seeing him welcome back in Chicago, and he spent so much of his career there, so that was a very positive sign. And I think he makes this team better, not just obviously on defense, but also on offense. I think he, having him be a potential threat on a night-to-night basis makes his team more dangerous. And now, with Whiteside's development, you've got four shooters there. You've got four scorers, rather, that can affect a game on a night-to-night basis, and that's great. I mean, we're not getting production out of the point guard position. I'm glad to see it finally coming from Deng and much more consistent than what we've seen.
Back to those
Yep.
point guards. Napier was
Uh,
included again
Bandit.
last week. He had a bit of a run. Then last night we saw no Norris Cole. What? I don't know. Do we even bother? It's
He's
like
gone.
I feel like as soon as we get excited about one of them, they stuff up, then they're out. Then it's just all over the show with our point guard
Well,
situation.
you remember coming to the year, when we came to the year, Norris Cole's a starter. Mario Chalmers had a very defined role. He was going to be that dual guard,
He
that
was,
sixth
he
man,
was a put,
you
yeah.
know. And it's been so bad now that they had to put Chalmers back to the starting position again. And the thing is with Norris Cole, I mean,
I still
look,
think Chalmers should be starting, though, I'll just say.
Well,
He
he is
needs to
now.
be
You got
starting.
your wish. You've
He
gotten your
should
wish
be.
because that's been the case. I think, in the case of Napier, while he's had ups and downs this year, though, to be honest with you, I feel like the Heat are more safe with him than with Norris Cole. Norris Cole is so chaotic. I mean, obviously Norris Cole is a good defender, on ball defender, but outside of that, though, I feel like Norris Cole makes a lot of bonehead decisions on the court. I
He was
feel like
great
this team.
against OKC in those last quarter. He like he's
Right.
a zippy. He's fast and he's
But
played well with confidence. But yeah, he's either on or off. I know what you're saying.
right, but Norris Cole is the odd man out. I mean, now it's a matter of are they still going to showcase him for teams in February for the trade deadline, or are they going to wait and just wait by their time till the off season and let him just walk once free agency starts? I mean, I just I'll say it again, his days are numbered. Obviously, it's a matter of if it's numbered within a month or numbered within the next 5 months.
I think, yeah, I think they're shutting him down now because the more he plays, the lower value he is. So I think they don't want. I think he's already shown the ceiling to which he can play, and maybe it'll be
True.
a Whiteside type situation where he goes somewhere and he finds an awesome fit. And we've seen that from a number of players. We even saw that in Oklahoma City from Dion Waiters. He struggled a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Oklahoma City and he fits so well there. He provides that scoring boost that they needed on the bench, et cetera, especially when Reggie Jackson isn't playing well. But I think with Cole at this point, he's not going to play to the level that they need him to. So why not just shut him down and have him, maintain whatever value he has left at this point? He's a contract coming off the books. There's some team that's going to want to make a move. I'm just curious to see whether or not they'll package somebody like, maybe Chris Anderson or something. I mean, I think that's the only thing we of value that we have. Maybe Josh McRoberts, if they're willing to throw in the towel on that. And that's, but it's possible that they could give up on the whole Josh McRoberts experiment. If Whiteside is going to be a part of next season's plans because he's under contract, you have Chris Bosh moving back to the power forward position. either you have a highly paid reserve in McRoberts on the books, or you package him together with Norris Cole and maybe make a move for Aaron Aflalo or somebody else along those lines. We still need a backup two guard because, you know, Wade's going to miss some time. James Ennis hasn't blossomed as much as they'd like. So at this point, I think they're shutting down Cole because they're going to move him in the next few weeks. And I think, you know, what they can get back from remains a guess at this point.
Oh, you were just leading me into my next thing. I was going to talk about the fact that we've released Tyler Johnson. Came, he went 10 days in and out. Can we survive the rest of the season without a shooting guard? You'd say when you talk about shooting guards there, what is our situation there? Like, do you think we just float around the season and just rely on Wade?
Well, I mean, Spoelstra keeps staggering the rotation so that either he or Bosch is in at any point, and then you have these, you know, three guards where you can use either, you know, Chalmers and Cole or Chalmers and Wade, you know, or maybe Napier is getting some significant playing time, and he and Chalmers can kind of play this point guard, shooting guard role. You get some quality scoring and shooting from them. You know, it's been inconsistent, so you can't really rely on that too heavily. But I think that's the nature of it now. You've got, you know, Anderson is going to keep scoring off the bench. I think if Whiteside's starting, obviously he's going to be productive. You know, Bosch is going to get his points. I think ideally that's not the situation Miami would prefer. They'd rather have somebody that they can trust, somebody who's going to spread the floor a little bit or be explosive enough to get to the hoop. I guess maybe they were hoping that would be Tyler Johnson, but I don't think they saw enough of him.
See enough out of a person in 10 days?
Well, hey, Hassan Whiteside got a contract like that. I mean, he was here, and then they sent him down to the D-League, and then they brought him back up, and now he's a starter and a major component. Probably not. Look, I think, you know, if he had – you know, maybe Wade had gone hurt over the last week or two since Johnson was under contract. Maybe they would have given him an opportunity. But I think he's also – his size is an issue.
Yeah. That's what I was meant to say. At the game – I don't know if you saw him at the Orlando game, but when I saw him, it was funny when they're all warming up because it was literally like Tyler Johnson was the mop boy.
Right.
Because
right.
like mm-hmm. him next to everyone else, it's like, man, it's hard to believe that that guy's an athlete. Not disrespecting him, but just next to everyone else, his size, and it was like the kid out there, like the ball boy or something.
Right. They list him at 6'4", and that seems awfully generous.
I found that generous because he was next to Cole, and Cole's like 6'2", and I didn't feel like he was any taller than Cole.
Yeah, I mean, I stood next to Russell Westbrook and Dion Waiters.
He's so tiny!
I'm as tall as they are, so Yeah, so I think Tyler Johnson he doesn't fit a typical shooting guard. As explosive and athletic, and it's, you know, unbelievable that he can dunk the way he does at his height. But I don't think they're going to get shut down. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's not going to be able to guard those. I mean, could you picture him going up against Giannis, you know, in Milwaukee, or a guy like that, that, you know, sometimes they play him at the two guard?
Someone, just going back to who you touched on, James Ennis. What aren't we seeing from Ennis that needs to get him more consistent minutes?
You know, Spoelstra is so, you know, he's so picky as far as what he's looking for in practice. I guess it's just more of a commitment. He seems a little bit mindless. He's not really mindless on defense. Yes,
just doing a few crazy things.
Exactly what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. And you know, Spoelstra, he needs players that are intelligent, have high basketball IQs, and are aware of what they're supposed to be doing at all times. And he just gets, you know, he gets lost a little bit. He has the athleticism so that he can overcompensate for that at times, but not nearly consistent enough to continue getting playing time. So if he's not going to do it in practice, he's not going to get any playing time. He's not going to get the opportunity to prove himself.
Yeah, a lot of the sports decision making is happening not on the court. A lot of fans get frustrated. It's like, oh, why don't you see this guy play more often? Well, you're not seeing what Spoelstra sees in practice, and I'd rather take advice from a guy who's won two titles already and four finals appearances than some fanboy who doesn't know anything about anything. Yeah. You know, if it's not translating in practice, it won't translate on the court during regular NBA games. So I'll trust Spoelstra on this one. Don't let go of the rope.
So moving ahead, to this week, just going out. We're kind of lucky. We've got a reasonably quiet week. A quiet week being three games. We're up against the Bucks first. I believe that's away, isn't it?
That's a nice game.
Mind you, they're going all right, aren't they?
Well, I mean, right now they're in the sixth spot, right ahead of us, and they're correct. Going through.
I keep forgetting to think of them that way.
Right. I mean, they made an early season push, and they were in the top four at one point, I think. And you know, they've had some injury problems, and Jason Kidd keeps playing around with that lineup, and you know, you've got to give him credit. I don't think
Coach
we saw
year,
that.
Jason Kidd.
What's that?
Mm-hmm. Coach of the year, Jason Kidd.
Well, I mean, you know. Yeah,
hey, they were bottom last year.
Considering last year, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't think anybody was going to, you know, expect that out of Kidd, you know, the player that he was. I didn't think it would translate as well, but he did it in Brooklyn, where he wasn't afraid to, you know, bench certain players, and he moved Paul Pierce into the power forward position and had Kevin Garnett at center, and it worked for them. And I think it's working in Milwaukee as well. So I think they're still a dangerous team because you never know what they are capable of on a night-to-night basis. But their injuries are going to pile up, and eventually it's going to take a toll. And so I think that's a good statement game for Miami, who might be able to continue moving up in the standings, maybe finish somewhere around the sixth.
Well, speaking of statement games, it is going to be a statement game if we can get a win against Dallas again here on the Friday night. Obviously, we know how that game went when we were early. Great game. Whiteside, Dirk, it's going to be a lot of fun. If we can get a consistent win, that could be just, you know, I felt like when we beat the Cavs over Christmas, it felt like suddenly we all were optimists again. Like, it felt like, yes, this is something we can do. We can be really competitive coming to the playoffs and play really good. And then, you know, they lost to shitty teams. So, you know, I kind of feel really good coming off the Bulls game yesterday, but you know, we know that we're very inconsistent, but being Dallas could be another really, you know, momentum push.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing about Dallas, though. Dallas, to me, is better now than they were when we beat them back in November. Rondo. They have Rondo now. And to me, I got the Dallas Mavericks to be right in the mix of a conference title in the West. I think they're that good. Uh-huh. So this is definitely going to be a tougher game than it was back in Dallas back in November. So
at least we're at home, and we've got, you know, it's not for back-to-back.
But they're still somewhat inconsistent there. I mean, I'm actually very curious to see how. Yeah, I'm curious to see how Tyson Chandler and Whiteside match up. I mean, Chandler, you know, he's a hot-headed player at times, and he can get frustrated there. Will he deliver a cheap shot? Maybe we'll try to foul Whiteside and get him off his game a little bit. You know, he's an active rebounder and shot blocker as well. So that should be a really interesting matchup there. And it's great to see Chris Bosh going up against Dirk Nowitzki, because we haven't seen that over the last few years. You know, we've seen, you know, him going up against Chandler or whomever else they had in Mavericks and Dallas at the center position. But now it's two of the best, you know, power forwards of all time, and Nowitzki and Bosh. That's a great matchup.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that Bosh has realized he's on a center now.
Yeah,
stick to power forward. No,
it worked so well, though. I mean, having him at the center position, because it created those mismatches on, you know, and it was an advantage for Miami. But, you know, we can't capitalize on that anymore without LeBron James here.
And then our last game for the week will be the Celtics. Nice. I mean, no one's a coasty win, but I just like that we've got a relatively, I'm not going to say easy week, quiet week in regards to three games.
Is that a home game? Is that in Boston? Is that a home?
I can't figure out my app, so I can't tell you.
I think it's an away game.
We won that game, but we're better on our own anyway.
I don't remember us playing them this year.
Yeah, they beat us.
We did.
Did they play here?
Yeah, no, they did.
We beat them.
I thought we lost that game.
No, we beat them bad. I believe that was without some of our key guys.
I can't remember.
I thought it was around that. No, I want to say it was during that 7-game homestand where the only quality wins we had were against.
Yeah, I think I was away actually. I think they came here.
Yeah, didn't we lose to them? Didn't we lose to them? And didn't we lose to, you know, Philadelphia and a few other teams? I mean,
someone check your bloody thing. Someone check.
I'm checking my phone in the toilet.
I can't do anything.
I'm checking right now. But I know for a fact we won that game though. But let me say something right now. Back to the Milwaukee game. That Milwaukee game is huge because I don't think we're going to get higher than six. I think the five, unless a team in the five, probably Toronto falls back. I don't see Miami getting past six. Cleveland's gotten together now a little bit. You know, obviously Atlanta's really good. Washington's going to stabilize where they're at now. Chicago's going to stay in top four, obviously. So Toronto might be the only team that may, I think, will fall back to earth a little bit. But I don't know if they fall back that far unless Miami goes on a major run.
Yeah.
So six, Ernest, that matches Milwaukee's humongous.
Ernest, you're absolutely right. We beat them 100-84.
What was the date?
It was Sunday, December 21st.
I see.
And we had just lost. Christmas. Yeah, it was that 7-game homestand. I think that was the only other victory aside from Cleveland that we got while we were at home. That's what
well,
it was.
Yeah.
We, went 2-5 and we beat Cleveland, we beat Boston, we lost to Utah, Washington, Philadelphia, and then we got our butts kicked by Memphis
and
too.
And that game was, and Boston didn't play that game either, for the record.
That's right. Wonderful. David Rommel there with all your stats. follow David Rommel and Ernest Christian. You can find them on Hot Hot Hoops. I'm your host, Haley Burns. I'll talk to you guys again in a couple of weeks or whenever we can get through this blizzard that's happening across the country right now.
Except in Miami.
Talk to you guys soon, okay?
Here, yeah.
All right. Take care.
All right, take care.